say?
Standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
You are, of course, listening to the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg. My co-host this week is Christopher O'Brien. You know, one of the things we don't talk about as much as we should on the show is how the media treats the subject of UFOs and paranormal research. Now, in case you're just listening to the show, we've talked about it in the past, not as much. And I have to say that during the time that I was working for the traditional broadcast media back in the 1970s, that makes me older than dirt, I guess, I covered UFO stories in the area in which I worked, which was Southeast Pennsylvania, and my bosses never said anything bad about it. It was okay because it was also in the mainstream printed press, so they didn't care. As long as I covered my normal news beat, they didn't worry if I stuck in a UFO story, so long as there was duplicate coverage from other members of the media. I even had a UFO magazine at the time, but I don't think they understood that concept. So they let me do my thing. And even nowadays, I do a technology radio show, the Tech Night Owl Live. I do the Paracast, and people don't really criticize me for it. What about you? You came out in this field with a background as a musician. Of course, you were therefore an entertainer. So how did the adaptation process go?
Well, you know, Gene, I've been on, I don't know how many television segments, film documentaries, hundreds and hundreds of radio programs, like many people in the field. I'm leery of the media, but much to my surprise, all through the 90s into, you know, the new millennium here, I never had any problems with the media in terms of them pulling fast ones, misstating, you know, what I was actually presenting, until I did the show UFO Hunters back in 2007. And that was the first time that I really became upset because of the media's, you know, treatment of my own personal appearance and my work. I was asked to help out on a segment that addressed window areas or portal areas around the country, and we were doing the show here in Sedona. And I bent over backwards to help field produce the show. I got together the witnesses and did a lot of unpaid work, in a sense, for them to help them make the best segment possible. And during the interview that they conducted with me, which was over 2 hours, I explained laboriously that my research into the San Luis Valley was what I was basing all the information I was relating to them. I said, this is all about the San Luis Valley. And so what they did on the in the editing bay, much to my horror, was they cut my interview to make it sound like everything I was saying was about Sedona. And, you know, one of the main hosts on the show even blurted out one of my standard lines I've been using for years. The San Luis Valley has the highest incidence of UFO sightings in North America. He just substituted the word Sedona for that. I really was upset about that because I felt that this was these guys were being dishonest, basically.
But why would they do that? Where does it matter if the sightings occur in the San Luis Valley or in Sedona, other than being hundreds of miles distant from each other?
Right. Well, I think that there is this thing going on to try to get Sedona to be the real focus and hotspot area, I think, for the paranormal and for the New Age, for that matter, and metaphysical subjects. And I think the San Luis Valley either isn't sexy enough, or there's stuff going on there that the powers that be don't want people to know about. I think one of the reasons why the San Luis Valley is kind of getting dissed in this particular instance is I have a sneaking suspicion that there is something going on there that has to do with black budget money, potential secret government projects. And I think it's there's a possibility. I'm not saying this is for certain. I just have a hunch here that there's a bit of an effort to keep the lid on the San Luis Valley to some extent, to keep attention focused elsewhere. And
okay,
I'm not saying
okay. That raises the bigger question. Okay. So you feel that the people, UFO hunters, may have been unfairly influenced by some of the powers that be to change San Luis Valley to Sedona?
Well, they were shooting in Sedona, so I know they were really invested in the location because it is sexy. There's great shots here, obviously, with the Red Rocks. I really can't say for certain, obviously, whether they were leaned on to do what they did. However, this isn't the only indication I've had over the years that there seems to be a kind of a lid that's being put on the San Luis Valley. For instance, the NIDS Black Triangle map, the Larry Hatch Black Triangle map, and the MUFON Black Triangle map have been combined together into one big map that shows all the Black Triangle sightings around North America. I personally gave two out of those three 12 really good reports, including a half a dozen reports of Black Triangles reported by law enforcement. And wouldn't you know it, you look on the map there, and there's not one single Black Triangle sighting between Denver and, like, Albuquerque. So maybe that's an oversight on their part. Shoddy research, definitely. And, you know, my database is there. Just recently we had this Fake or Fake show come to the San Luis Valley and investigate a cattle mutilation case. And they totally debunked the whole thing in a ridiculous manner. So, you know, I'm not saying that that my hunch is correct. I'm just saying that I have this hunch. So I've been lucky over the years, though. The media, I think, has treated my work with respect. I've never had, up until the UFO Hunter segment, I've never had reason to be upset with the media for my own personal treatment. Although, boy, I have got complaints about how they handle the paranormal realm in general, that's for sure.
Well, certainly, that show is no longer on the air, UFO Hunters, so we don't know what the motivations were. I got the impression in communicating privately with Bill Burns, one of the hosts, that he claims he wasn't responsible for what happened. I'm not going to attach blame one way or the other. It's one of those unfortunate things where some really interesting data got screwed up, and it shouldn't have been. And part of the problem also is the media, when it makes a mistake, deliberate or otherwise, they don't apologize. That's very unfortunate.
No, they don't.
All right. We have a guest making a return appearance this week.
Yeah,
Ray
we do.
Stanford.
Oh, boy.
Now, I know from the previous appearance on the PowerCast, he was a rather crusty character. In fact, as our listeners might remember, at one point he almost threatened to terminate the conversation.
No, he did threaten to terminate the conversation. And, well, you know, Ray, I've known Ray for many years. I consider him one of the most important people in the field of ufology. This is based on my own personal opinion. But I met a lot of the movers and shakers in this field. And in terms of visual acuity and knowledge and a 50-plus year history in the field, I don't think anybody can touch Ray Stanford. And there's elements about Ray's past that have come up on the Paracast forums. And we're going to ask Ray about some of these things. He is considered to be a psychic by many people who have known him over the years. And he has done actual channelings and stuff many years ago. And he is, for instance, he's being called a psychic paleontologist. He's found more dinosaur tracks than any other person, has probably the largest collection of dinosaur tracks in the world. And he also discovered a cast of the only fully articulated dinosaur skeleton ever discovered on the East Coast. Now, all these discoveries he's made with his observational acuity inside the Beltway. So we're talking just right around the Washington, D.C. area. He walks the creeks and finds these incredible tracks, some of which have never been discovered before. There is something about Ray that is above normal here. And I want to start our show with Ray in, you know, addressing this, because a lot of people have misconceptions about the man, and he's, you know, they just put his nodosaur in the Smithsonian Institute as a permanent display. So we're not dealing with a slouch here. He's a big league amateur scientist, and I'm really looking forward to this show. We're going to be talking about the White Sands July 1978 event that he and his team covered, and this is going to be a fascinating show today, Gene.
Also, we'll ask him briefly about the Sicara, New Mexico case, kind of a follow-up, in light of the recent death of the witness, Lenny Zamora, and maybe some of the criticisms that have been lodged lately by one particular blogger about the authenticity of the Sicara incident. So, coming up on the PowerCast this week, Ray Stanford will return, And we don't know whether or not he's going to hang up on us. We're going to have to see, because we're not going to hold back the questions. The co-host this week is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
As you know, the Paracast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks. With more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers, for listeners of the Paracast, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One book to consider, for example, is Above Top Secret, The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up by Timothy Good. Timothy Good, as you know, has been a guest on the Paracast. Yet another book worth considering from Audible.com is Lies and Deception, UFOs and the Secret Agenda, from Timothy Good once again, and also from our old friend Nick Pope. As you know, Nick Pope has also been on the Paracast. This is another book that you're definitely going to want to check out. For this book or another free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/paracast. That's audiblepodcast.com/paracast.
Good day. This is Peter Krachnamo from Midas Resources. Today is August 27th, 2010. Gold opened this morning at $1,238.40. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,271.33, $635.66 for a half ounce, and $317.83 for a quarter ounce. $1,271.33, $635.66, and $317.83.
Again, the Congressional Budget Office sounds the alarm, warning of Greek-style U.S. debt crises. CBO is drawing a parallel between U.S. economy and the Greek economic meltdown. Debt to GDP climbing to unfamiliar territory and deficits rising to unsupportable levels. Hi, Ted Anderson. The Federal Debt and Risk of Financial Crises document the CBO has published is a must-read for every American. Covering the risks of deficit spending, aging population, and rising interest rates spells economic disaster. Call today at 800-686-2237. I'll send it free. Again, call 800-686-2237. Ask for the CBO document. Call 800-686-2237.
When you hear the words water purification, what comes to mind? If it's Berkey Water Purification Systems, this message is for you. Did you know that over 60% of municipal water contains fluoride at less than 2 cents per gallon? Berkey water filters purify treated and untreated water, remove dangerous chlorine, fluoride, and contaminants from municipal water. These filters are powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water, making them perfect for rainwater collection systems. From the smallest to the largest systems, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has what you need. With your system purchase, you'll receive a shower filter, a fluoride filter, or 2 Sport Berkey bottles absolutely free. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com would like to offer GCN listeners 5% off all ceramic filter systems and ship all orders over $50 free of charge. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY today.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, CrossbreedHolsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
There's a wide range of stuff on here.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
Genesis.
You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
The co-host this week is Christopher O'Brien. Our guest returning to the Paracast this week is UFO paranormal researcher Ray Stanford. And we're going to cover a whole range of questions about his background, his research, and, you know, some of the questions you've asked, ladies and gentlemen, in the Paracast forums at forum.thepowercast.com. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the PowerCast. Ray, maybe you could start with a couple of comments about the Zacharo, New Mexico case recently. Lonnie Zamora died.
Yes,
and
Lonnie
maybe
Zamora
you can
died.
Give us some remembrances having known him at the time you were investigating the case.
Well, Lonnie, in my experience, was, and I've interviewed a lot of people that have seen and reported seeing UFOs and even photographing them, but Lonnie would rank at the absolute top of the quality as far as integrity and unwillingness to embellish the story, just be straight facts. I guess that partly came with his background as a police officer. And it was very sad to learn of his passing. He had even heard about the ridiculous claims of this thing having been a student prank before he passed on.
Now, maybe we can just detail that very quickly. There was a report by a blogger named Brigalia, I believe, and he had this quote from one of the professors at this local college suggesting they all knew it was a prank. So what's the story about that?
This was nothing new to my knowledge. Back when I was there firsthand investigating the case in April of 1964, Dr. Kogay was there at what is Sunco, New Mexico Tech, and he was asked by a news person there about this case, and he said, well, you know, it has to be a student prank, student hoax, because those kind of things, nothing can come that far. And so it has to be a student prank. And he was asked if he could put his finger on any student that did it. He said, no, but it just has to be. Of course, he was an art skeptic, and that was his kind of logic. And I think that
so basically this is the must-be answer. It has to be something normal, therefore it must be a prank.
Yes, and I think that he wasn't being completely forthcoming when he put a note in a letter to the late Dr. Linus Pauling saying it was a student prank. It's a shame that when a scientist like Dr. Kogay will step out of the bounds of science and state something that as his personal wish as being fact.
Now, this particular person who wrote this article, Anthony Brigalia, is he just a skeptic, yes, or is he looking for a headline or what? No, I have to mention, we did invite him on the PowerCast, and he declined to appear.
Yes. Yes, he was invited to debate me on this, and he refused to appear. He knew I had the better side. In the first place, he was saying, oh, these witnesses, it's just going to be a few days. We're going to get some of these people that are involved in this come up. Well, of course, they never did, because no one ever did it. I mean, there's no way that what happened on April 24, 64, in broad daylight in front of this police officer's eyes, including part of it within 50 feet, there's no way that there was a student prank. So even back at that time, even the media man that he had, Dr. Colgate, had told this to about it being a student prank, realize that, you know, this was just wishful thinking on Dr. Colgate's part.
Yeah, and one thing that I really want to point out here, in case we forget, is when Brigalia came out with his part two to his article, I think it was the following day that Lonnie Zamora died. And it's kind of hard not to, you know, go there and draw any sort of conclusions. But Lonnie was a stand-up guy from all of my knowledge about the case, and, of course, talking to Ray about it. And I just hope he just didn't die of a broken heart for having his, you know, his integrity and everything else called into question by this Johnny-come-lately, who's basically a pot stirrer. He just likes to get in there and pick a subject and stir the pot up and create controversy.
Lonnie was not affected by it. Lonnie had, from the word go, when he had this experience, you know, high school kids and college kids would drive by and say, hey, have you seen any UFOs lately, and this kind of stuff. And Lonnie took it in good spirits. Yes, it made him feel badly, but he really didn't let this kind of thing hurt him.
And that's good.
That's one good thing here I wanted to just mention here. You mentioned this fellow, Anthony Brigalia. Has he done this kind of ambush elsewhere?
I haven't followed him, to tell you the truth. When I saw, and not an ambush, I saw him claiming that Nitinol was invented because of bendable, turned back to its original shape, metal in the alleged crash at Roswell. And frankly, it was in no way, in my opinion, scientific reporting. It was guess after supposition, and it was certainly not good reporting, certainly not good science in tracing the origin of Nigel. So, in my opinion, the things I saw, I just quit listening to him until the Socorro thing came up, because I didn't feel that his investigations were thorough or objective or insightful.
Okay, well, since he doesn't want to come here to defend himself, maybe we should just begin to drop the subject.
Yeah, and move on. Well, just let him do his thing. He seems like a fairly good researcher, but he's able to dig around and find things. But I think his conclusions, I think he's got to be a little bit more careful with how he poses his conclusions. And I think Ray brought up a real good point in that regard.
So, Ray, just briefly before we go on to some other subjects, what can we take away from the Socorro, New Mexico incident? This is something that happened, 40-some-odd years ago?
That's right. There's some good evidence we can take away. For one thing, although I've offered it to people, nobody has used it as yet, I have a professional quality video that I had made out in front of our office headquarters in Austin, Texas, of our project Starlight International. And Hynek is sitting there, and he confirms that the film that Officer Ted Jordan had taken right after the object had taken off, just while it was almost still visible in the sky, Jordan got there right away because he was a state police officer and was listening on the state police band. And he got pictures and was asked to get them to the Air Force for processing. And he couldn't get them back. And finally, he had Lonnie ask Dr. Hynek when he was in town in August what had happened. And Hynek told him, well, the Air Force wouldn't give them back to him because they were fogged as though by some kind of radiation. And so Zamora relayed this information to me, and I got Hynek down there and put him on camera and asked him point blank, and he confirmed it. He said that that is what the Air Force told him was the reason that they didn't give him his film back. That's interesting evidence in itself when you have the guy that was the chief scientific consultant on UFOs with Project Blue Book telling that they didn't tell the public the film was irradiated. They told Zamora through Hynek, and ultimately I learned it. Now, there's other things that we can take from this case. One thing is there is a rock that was 4 or 5 inches below where the main landing exhaust was pointing downward when it landed and took off, that I have that, and I have nearly 100 pounds of control samples that don't have this, of the same type of volcanic rock. This rock has crystals of quartz in it, but these crystals appear to have turned to glass. They're no longer birefringent as crystals are.
I hate to interrupt, Ray, but we're going to have to pick that up in the next section of the PowerCast. We do welcome your comments. Post them at forum.thepowercast.com, forum.thepowercast.com. We have Ray Stanford. Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the PowerCast.
Okay, neighbors, here's the problem. Face-to-face business meetings with clients and colleagues are always going to be important. But business travel is a hassle, and it's often a complete waste of money. Well, here's a solution for you. Do more, travel less with GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is an award-winning online meeting service brought to you by Citrix. With just a click, host sales presentations, training sessions, or product demos right from your own desk. Avoid the hassle of traveling and still exceed your sales goals. Plus, GoToMeeting is just $49 a month for unlimited online meetings. Plus, voice over IP and phone conferencing is included. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Once again, GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast.
9 years, thousands of clients worldwide, amazing results. And here's more proof of the effectiveness of how Heart and Body Extract supports good circulation and healthy arterial flow.
My name is Crystal. I'm a 45-year-old and live in Houston, Texas. I was diagnosed with having mitral valve prolapse 10 years ago. My cardiologist said surgery and drugs was the only thing he could offer me.
What did Crystal do?
I ordered Heart and Body Extract in August 2006. When I first took my first 15 drops, I embraced the formula and could even feel the goodness of the formula starting to work.
Clean, clear arteries are happy arteries after using Heart and Body Extract. Learn more at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. HB Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Remain in your houses. The President of the United States has declared martial law under Executive Order 11004.
Will they do it? Will they pull the trigger this time? We all pray they stand down, but an engineered crisis seems more likely with each passing day. Think it can't happen here? Executive Order 10990 locks down all highways. Executive Order 10995 seizes control of all media outlets. Executive Order 10998 controls all farms and food supplies. All these executive orders are now cocked, loaded, and waiting for the right crisis. So if you're worried about the possibility of martial law here in America or have questions about how to survive it, go to martiallawsurvival.com. That's martiallawsurvival.com. Go to martiallawsurvival.com right now.
You must remain in your houses until your bracelets are scanned.
Question. What would you rather drink? Acidic water, which burns holes in your body and causes loss of bone mass? Or alkaline water, which promotes high energy and vibrant health? The answer is clear. And if you're drinking acidic water, you're helping cancer cells and bacteria to grow out of control. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using Plasma pH Drops is the best way to alkalize your water and help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to a healthy alkaline level. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, or cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or by calling 269-409-1776. Again, 269-409-1776.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You've entered another dimension. You've entered the Paracast.
Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. The guest is Ray Stanford. We are just wrapping up some discussions about the impact of the Sicario, New Mexico case from 1960s. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast, and you were talking about this rock, Ray, turning to crystal?
No, it had crystals in it. It was a type of volcanic rock that that cools slowly enough for crystals to form in it. In other words, it's not glass. It actually has recrystallized. But certain quartz crystals are reached a certain size that you can easily see them with the naked eye. And it appears upon the surface of this that where these this quartz is quite strong, tough stuff, and there's been some erosion around it. And you can see it looks like when this thing was heated up, the quartz crystals that were already there at the surface have lost their quartz shape. You can see their shape as it goes into the matrix of the six-sided quartz figure. But you see it's a globule, like it was melted, and although the main mass was not melted, the crystals were, which strongly suggests a resonance phenomenon, as you might have in a watch, for example, of a quartz crystal resonating at a certain frequency to keep time. It looks like there was a resonance phenomenon possibly by the quartz in the quartz crystals, which in itself would be extremely important and potentially diagnostic, because there are very few things that you could project onto a quartz crystal and get the into this volcanic material and get the quartz crystals to resonating so fast that they would heat up and melt. It requires about, 1,400 degrees centigrade to melt that kind of quartz, and so it's quite a respectable task, to say the least. So it looks like we have some pretty good evidence of an unusual mode of propulsion in the takeoff and landing exhaust, so-called, at Socorro, which didn't bounce like a rocket exhaust. Lonnie had seen rockets launched, tested at White Sands. The exhaust actually surprised him by knifing in. It didn't bounce off. It actually seemed to knife into the soil, which would suggest maybe subatomic particles at relativistic velocities, heating local atmosphere in such a way that it turned kind of a bluish color, and around the edge it was kind of an orange. Just what I would expect under such a circumstance.
But we're going to segue, which is something we do on radio shows. We're going to segue to another incident that we wanted to talk about this week, and I'm going to turn the mic over to Chris to follow up on something that happened in 1978 at White Sands.
Thanks, Gene. You know, having worked with Ray for a number of years and getting countless examples of his investigative work down in manuscript form, actually, in a conversational manuscript form, one of the most compelling cases that Ray told me about had to do with a July of 1978 investigative trip out to the White Sands military base out there and onto the edge of the base. And why don't you start in with a little setup piece, Ray, about how you found out that you should be going out there with your team. I think this is a very, very intriguing story, and it has tons of hard scientific data that you're able to obtain, which we'll get into. But why don't you start us out and tell us how you found out about something going on at White Sands?
Well, back in January, I had been on the Phil Donahue show.
This is 1978, January, right?
That's right.
Okay.
And at the time when I first, my office got this information, I had been out in Phoenix investigating a case where two people had filmed the same kind of object I had filmed from an airliner in 1277, the year before. But when I got back to Austin, my secretary told me that there was a call from a very nice and interesting lady that she thought I ought to call, return the lady's call right away, which I did. A very nice person. It turns out that she had been watching the Donahue show. She didn't even realize that her project existed, headquartered right there in Austin, and was thrilled. So she called her brother, who was a physical scientist working at the White Sands Proving Grounds at that time. She told him about the equipment that we'd showed pictures of and discussed on the Donahue show, which received more calls than the show ever received in its history, understood later from the producer. And she told him these details, and he said, "My gosh," he said, "I'm so glad you called me this time." He said, "For several weeks, we have been plagued by these crazy things out here." He said, "There has been, in fact, so much activity that a directive was sent out that everyone out here was to use any means at their disposal to get intelligence on these objects." And he said, "I would bet if you would tell those guys to sneak around here, they obviously can't get in the facility, but if they'll sneak around the edge, they've got to see these things because we are seeing them so regularly and constantly in the last few weeks." Well, we wouldn't pass up an opportunity like that. So on the morning of the 19th of July, 1978, we had packed all of our fancy equipment in the Chevrolet Silverado, and the three, myself and two other persons, experienced members of our ground crew that can operate the equipment. We took off for First West Texas, and it was odd because we had planned to circulate around the east side of White Sands, and when we got to the highway where we were to turn, I had this weird sensation. Maybe this is where my grandmother inherited psychic ability comes in. I had a feeling if we took that route, we wouldn't see a thing. I had a feeling to go on and take the highway across to Roswell, not because of Roswell, but because it was the highway I felt we were to take, and we did. And when we got through Plains, Texas, just west of Plains, Texas, in broad daylight, all of a sudden we saw two UFOs maneuvering in the beautiful blue desert sky, and we stopped, and now we were so excited I forgot to put out the gravimeter sensor, but I put out the magnetometer sensor properly deployed, and got the Super 8 millimeter movie camera with 10 power telephoto lens out, and filmed these things. They were wonderful. These objects would go along side by side, and we had the impression they were a pretty good angular size. Each object, I would say that it covered about nearly the full angular width of the full moon, which would be about a half degree. And they would be moving along side by side at high speed, and we felt they were somewhere at least between 60 and 90,000 feet, maybe higher. And then one would instantly be going the other way. Now, it's interesting that when I examine the movie film afterward, you see both objects. They look quite normal until the moment the one reverses. The moment before it reverses around that one, you see a donut of a brilliant red with streaks going out from it in all directions. And this would suggest some bursts of energy that enable it to flip and move exactly 180 degrees with no visible slowdown, which is in itself quite remarkable. But that's what we recorded, and we had the first great thrill of our experiences in trying to hard data monitor UFOs, because as we watched this, we had an audio analog of the magnetic field. They were putting out strong magnetic field effect in the extreme low frequency range. And whenever visually one of these objects would reverse direction, let me give you with my voice as close as I can duplicate it, an audio frequency analog. Here we go.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. We are controlling.
Ray, that sounded like a wounded cat.
That's right. Well, it probably was a cosmic cat. And,
Ray, let me just jump in here real quick. You mentioned that you filmed this event. Now, have these films ever been shown publicly? I know you have.
You're sitting on a treasure trove of films. Right.
Have you ever had these broadcast anywhere? Have they ever been published?
Oh, no. These have not been broadcast.
Okay, we're going to talk about this whole subject. I don't want to interrupt and digress too far, but later on we'll talk about your films, but continue.
And I'll tell you, before we do continue, we're about to take a break, and I don't want to have a cliffhanger. People criticize us when we have to do a break, which is mandated by a time clock, and then we have to break a conversation. So I'm going to let Ray answer that question on the other side. We have to tell everybody that if you want to learn more of the things that we do, go to theparacast.com with a T-H-E, theparacast.com, where you learn the upcoming show schedules. And also you can download, close to 250 episodes of the Paracast free of charge. That means you don't pay a dime to get those episodes, and a lot of other shows, well, they charge you premium fees for things like that. We give it away. Are we stupid or not? Don't answer that question. Chris O'Brien joins us as co-host. Our guest is Ray Stanford. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Fate magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry.
You worry, but only because you're paying attention. What's happening in the Gulf of Mexico illustrates an audacity toward nature. A similar audacity called GMO, or genetically modified organisms, means that the quality of commercially grown food may be compromised with our health in the balance. Now that summer's here, what better time to learn about the bounty that nature provides in wild edible food? Let author Linda Runyon show you the best-kept secret in plain sight, that food is everywhere you look. This summer, for the cost of a good meal or two out, you can literally starvation-proof yourself and your loved ones against any future craziness and put up tons of free food, too. Whatever experiment is being run on us, you can rest assured that Linda's 50 or so staple foods aren't involved. Our foods are their enemy. So go to ofthefield.com or call toll-free 1-888-51-EAT-FREE and take that first step. Make your oasis of food security and nutrition now. That's OFTHEFIELD.com or call 1-888-513-2837. Start now and make 2010 your year of independence.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says in Ezekiel 7:19. Call 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Remember, food will be your greatest asset. Call 908-691-2608. This product does not contain THC. Call 908-691-2608 today.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
And I think it really does make a difference.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
Genesis.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
Ray Sanford joining us this week on the Paracast. We were about to talk further about this 1978 UFO encounter that he witnessed. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberger in the Paracast. So Chris put a question on the table, then I broke it for a few moments. Could you answer, Ray?
I'm not sure that Chris said he wanted to postpone the discussion of
yeah, let's cover that later. Let Ray go on.
Let me tell you a few more very important details of this case. We, as we normally did our field operations, we were recording a time signal from the Bureau of Standards at Fort Collins, Colorado. It's called WWVB. It's a binary time format. And we're recording this on the tape in a different range in which we're recording the magnetic field effects of the UFOs and GeoEffects, if we'd had that particular part operating that afternoon, which we forgot because it was so exciting. And we didn't forget the next later that night when something happened. But what is interesting is that when you look at the analog graph of the radio signal from Fort Collins Bureau of Standards broadcast, which is below our horizon there in West Texas, and it depends upon the reflection of the ionosphere, which acts kind of like a metal sheet and reflects the signal from the Bureau of Standards down toward us. But when you look at the signal of the UFO magnetic field in the extreme low frequency range, whenever that reversal of direction occurs, you see, and the field magnitude just pulses up tremendously high, you see a directly proportioned drop in the reception from WWVB, which indicates that they were disturbing the ionosphere with this strong magnetic field, which tends to be borne out also by the fact that they were at high altitude, as I said earlier, and therefore we have a substantiation there of an hypothesis that suggests that UFOs are using magnetohydrodynamic propulsion, that they are electrifying the atmosphere around them and moving it for propulsion with a magnetic field. And when they have to alter that and put on some extra force to reverse direction and it pulses up, it jars the ionosphere. We lose virtually all or almost all of our signal from the Bureau of Standards only in that period. And as soon as the UFO field returns to normal, the reception from Fort Collins returns to normal.
And you have this information in a graph form that was recorded at the time, at the location, in other words.
Yes, and yes, in fact, I sent you a slide that included two samples of it.
Okay, great. So we're going to put that up on the Paracast just to give people point of reference on that. Continue.
This was, of course, a most thrilling thing. We have not only the recordings going on inside the machine, the magnetometer, gravimeter, WWVB signal, externally we had an ambient sounds recorder that records every click of the camera, everything that we say, and this kind of thing. And it's really exciting when you listen to it after we did, when we got back to Austin. You hear, when we, for the first time in the history of our entire project, when we hear these strong magnetic pulses from the UFO, and suddenly it reverses direction, one of the two, and you hear this, woo-hoo! And it did this numbers of times. I mean, you hear us jumping up and down and shouting. We really had a shot of adrenaline with that. Now, as we left, as the objects disappeared and we put up our equipment and headed west on toward Roswell to have dinner, we got to talking. And I said, did you guys feel that feeling just before these things showed up? I said, I felt it really strongly. Yes, I did, from even the very first time I ever saw a UFO in the 1950s and the mid-1950s. They both said they did. And I said, I would think this must have been some kind of a psychic signal from the occupants. And one of our other two crew members there was a businessman.
Ray, hold on a second. You said you felt that this was a psychic signal from the occupants?
I thought it might be. I couldn't explain it. I had, you know, my first
suggest that they also kind of felt some sort of sensation?
Well, yes, what kind of surprised me, I asked them if they felt it, but I was very surprised to say that both of them did. But the one man who was
Ray. Okay, you felt this impression. Describe it in more detail. How do you feel? Why do you feel it would come from the occupants of these UFOs?
But I don't feel that. I want to explain that. I don't feel that. I did at the time and had since the 1950s, but this experience changed my mind, as you'll see. Now, the feeling is one that I call euphoria. E-U-P-H-O-R-I-A means a strong sense of well-being, or even a false sense of well-being. But I spell it with U-F-O-R-I-A, because what we've found out is that when these things get within about 20 miles of us, you can learn to feel this. But I did not know at the time that that is what this was that I'd experienced in UFO encounters since June 10th, 1953 or 54, whichever it was. And I had interpreted it as some kind of a psychic interface with the occupants.
Well, okay, so this euphoria could be maybe an outgrowth of the radiation they generate when they fly around in the vicinity.
Let me explain. The businessman who was with us, and one of our big financiers, he said, look, Ray, this was nothing psychic. He said, I'm as psychic as a glass doorknob. He said, you know, this was so physical you could cut
it's
it.
It's like my middle name, psychic as a glass doorknob.
Yeah, maybe he said brass. Either one, they rhyme. But what happened is he said, look, I can tell you, you know, how psychic I'm not. He said, this was something physiological. Well, when we had gone on and had the amazing experiences in the next few days and that night, we went out to California to the company that had made our equipment. And they analograph this, and we saw that a large part of the extreme low frequency magnetism that these objects were emitting was in the range of deep, restful sleep. Well, I did some research in depth upon studies not at all related to UFOs in laboratories studying the reaction of the human nervous system and brain, which is nervous system, of course, to extreme low frequency magnetism. And I found out that, for one thing, that when the brain system encounters those that are in that natural physiological range, by means of which they don't quite understand, at least didn't then, it starts replicating them. It starts copying. It's kind of like, I give you an analogy. You're around a person you really admire, and they're from another country, and then you're much embarrassed. An hour later, you're suddenly talking in their accent.
You say replication, something hits me here. Of all the thousands of people who've seen UFOs, maybe millions of people, how many experience this euphoria, this effect, when they are in the vicinity of a sighting? Is this something that's happening over and over again?
It is mentioned in the literature, not by my name, unless somebody's picked up on my telling it publicly. But let me point out that these may be one-event cases, and you don't make a correlation. For example, all those years and the encounters I had, I didn't make that correlation, of course, that it was physiological. But others with me had experienced it, but I was really pleased and surprised that these guys did that day. Anyway, anyway, we kept on going down the highway, and lo and behold, a cloud, a small one of these real light clouds moved out of the way, and here was a beautiful thing shaped like a cylinder, glowing an incredible, deep, rich emerald, the most beautiful Kelly or best quality emerald you could imagine, green, and suddenly off the end of it, two parallel streaks started projecting out. They were as fine as if you drew them with a sharp draftsman's pencil. And they went out like rails being projected out of the thing. And oh boy, of course, we threw on the brakes and we're going to stop and get our things. And at that point, another cloud, little cloud, moved in front of it. But before we could get our equipment out, the cloud moved out of the way and it was no longer there. But so that's one of the fish that got away. But they didn't get away that night, fortunately, because we followed what we had been told by the very nice lady in Austin, and we went right on, had dinner at Roswell, and went right on past Carrizota, which is just north of the highway in New Mexico, north of the White Sand Proving Range, and we got to a point just a little to the northwest of a huge peak there called Oscura, O-S-C-U-R-A, peak. You can get up on top of there if you had clearance, and you could look over and see where the first nuclear bomb was set off at the Jornada de Muerto in New Mexico. Well, anyway, we're driving along there, and I'm driving at that time, and I'm as tired as I can be because we'd spent most of the night before packing up, and so we're just really dragged out at that point. All of a sudden, I felt the euphoria so strong, which is a sense of extreme well-being, that, I mean, I had not ever experienced it that strong, perhaps. And I said to the other two, I said, "My gosh, do you guys feel that?" And one of the two people was my wife. And she said, "I really, this is incredible." She said, "It's so strong." And the other fellow, the businessman, said, "Yes, this is incredible." I said, "Look, it's so strong, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those things showed up right in front of us, right down the road."
I'll tell you what, that's the cliffhanger, right down the road. Ray Stanford joining us this week. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. And we're talking about some incredible UFO-related encounters in and around White Sands, starting in Texas, moving to New Mexico. And I want to get the geography straight in a moment. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNLive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNLive.com. Again, that's GCNLive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.